Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that each week discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. Tonight, I have a very special guest, and if you have any comments that you would like to call in, I'll let you know when you can dial in. Otherwise, in the meantime, you can email me at bonkay@aol.com. That's B-O-N-K-A-Y-E @aol.com. A few weeks ago, I met with a wonderful woman who's part of our support network here in Philadelphia, and this young lady will be joining us later on, Catherine. And she had this conversation with me. I've known her for several years. She said, Bonnie, you know, I love your books, and, you know, they really help change me and make me understand things. She says, but I was still reaching out, and I still couldn't really put my hand on everything and understand everything until I read this one wonderful book. And she was so impressed with the book and with the author, and she said, this book has actively really changed my life around. And I said, well, based on that, I am going to have to find this woman and find out who could write a book like that, who can change somebody's life so much. And when she went through all the details and told me about it, I said, I'm going to find this woman, and I'm going to try to track her down and beg her to come on this show to help some of the women that we have who really need to hear from her. And she was very gracious, and she said she would join the show. So without any further ado, I'd like to introduce Dr. Margalis Bielstad, who is a licensed marriage and family therapist in Fort Collins, Colorado. And she specializes in working with clients who are struggling in a relationship with a borderline or narcissist. And her wonderful book that changed this woman's life is called Stop Caretaking the Borderline or Narcissist, how to get out of the drama and get on with life. And this provides information how people can get caught up in being emotional caretakers to manipulative, borderline, or narcissistic family members and lose sight of their own needs, life direction, and even their own sense of identity. She provides insights and techniques on how to function more effectively and stop reinforcing the dysfunctional behaviors of the borderline or narcissist. So without further ado, let me introduce you. Thank you so much for coming on the show tonight.
Well, thank you, Bonnie, very much for inviting me. I'm very happy to be here tonight.
And let me ask you a little bit about this book that just made such an impact on this young lady's life. This book has been out for a couple of years, is that correct?
It was printed, yes, last year. It came out in February, so almost a year and a half.
Okay, and in this book, is it like, would you consider this a self-help book to help women recognize this problem?
I definitely tried to write it with the reader in mind so that they could both identify if they're in this kind of relationship and learn some about it and learn what to do about it and how to make choices and decisions in their life to make their life work a lot better.
I think what's so interesting, just in the title of itself, because often in our group, and there are many of us who are free to admit that we are part of that caretaker mentality. So can you give a little description of what you consider to be a caretaker?
Well, certainly. Caretakers have a lot of very positive qualities. They're very caring. They're concerned. They really like giving to others and pleasing others. They're hardworking. They're just very nice people. At the same time, they can be so nice that they forget to pay attention to their own needs. And they can often end up being depressed or anxious because they get into situations where they have a hard time saying no. They have a hard time setting boundaries. Oftentimes, they ignore their own needs as they're focusing so much on someone else that they aren't taking good care of themselves. And quite honestly, they can get into relationships with people who don't care about their needs very much at all because those needs haven't been very apparent.
I think a lot of times people say that there are givers and takers in life, and the takers need the givers, and the givers need the takers. But there needs to be a balance, right?
Well, yeah. A really healthy relationship would be what I call interdependent. Each person is giving, and each person is receiving. And there is, at least over time, a balance in that giving and taking. When it's just one-sided, that's when the giver really ends up getting the short end of the stick, so to speak, and not getting their needs met and often ending up depressed.
And I see that happening with many of our women because they are the caretaker role and they're taking care of a situation that can't get better. It only continues to get worse. But yet they feel it's their personal failure. And I'd like to ask your opinion on this. Do you think with a caretaker, does this necessarily have to do with self-esteem? Are there people with high self-esteem who are caretakers?
There are, actually. A lot of times we have different modes of operation and presenting ourselves and being in interactions in the professional world and in the personal world. And a lot of very strong professional women end up finding themselves in relationships in which they're more of a caretaker, where they're over-involved in trying to look out for the benefit of their partner. And a lot of times that does come from a childhood in which their own needs were ignored or not met. And yet they go on to strong careers as a way to elevate their self-esteem and to make a contribution, but sometimes the emotional level doesn't develop at the same level, and they have a low self-esteem in the relationship, and they may have high self-esteem out in the career world.
Now, I always say with our women, and many of our women do have husbands who are narcissistic in their personalities. Some have husbands who are also borderline or a combination of both. But I think it's no accident that they find us, because I really do believe that they're looking for women who are caretakers. Am I right in that assumption?
Oh, you are absolutely right. They are looking, and typically within the first meeting, they will already be testing to see if you're willing to give up your own view, your own feelings, your own needs, and focus on them.
Hmm.
And
do you find that
you
many
are,
of them have this charming kind of personality to kind of draw you in?
Oh, absolutely. Oftentimes they're very charismatic, especially the narcissists. They tell you they're going to take care of you, and really what they're looking for is for you to take care of them.
Exactly. So how are women able to learn how to recognize this characteristic in someone?
Well, I just wrote a blog this last couple weeks and made a whole list of things. Narcissists and manipulators tend to have a very high need to have your attention. They often are very good storytellers. They go on and tell you how wonderful they are and all their accomplishments. They expect you to pay attention, but they very rarely ask you a lot of questions. They're always focused on themselves, and really it becomes sort of a show or an entertainment. Even if it's a negative kind of entertainment where they're telling you all the woes of their life, that's attention getting as well. They also need a lot of control. Even if they ask you, where would you like to go to dinner? And then you tell them, and they say, oh, no, that's not a very good place. Let's go this other place. So they discount and invalidate, often charmingly, but that invalidation is still there, and they're testing to see if you will put up with it. They also tend to discount your own needs. If you say, I don't think you're listening to me, and they'll say, oh, yes, I am. Of course I am. So your view of the world as a caretaker is consistently discounted, and the manipulator doesn't see your perspective, and they don't want to see your perspective. And ultimately, in all manipulation, the manipulator is not telling the truth. They're not being honest with their own deepest feelings.
You know, you talk about caretaking. Was there a direct correlation between caretaking and codependency or not?
You know, they're very, very similar. A lot of times, however, in my practice, I see that there's a group of caretakers that are codependent, and then there's a group of caretakers that in their career, in their friendships, that they're not codependent there. They're only codependent in this one relationship. So that's kind of a little different than we often think of codependent. But the characteristics are very, very similar.
Do you think if they moved on to another relationship without getting help, they could fall into that role of codependency again?
Well, they could, but often they don't. Oftentimes they've had other relationships that were not codependent.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what often kind of confuses people who get into these relationships when they haven't had other relationships like that. What I do find in therapy, however, is that often in childhood they had a codependent relationship with one of their parents or with a sibling or someone close to them, so they learned that behavior even if they hadn't had it in a love relationship as an adult before.
I found that in life, I say this to women, that sometimes you have what they call, if you remember from an old movie, well, probably not because it's older than probably you, a lot older. There was a movie called Magnificent Obsession. And I often see this in women, that there'll be one time in their life that they just fall, become obsessed with someone without rhyme or reason or rationale, somebody who's usually never good for them. And they just have this immediate attraction that they can't break. Have you seen that?
Oh, definitely.
In women? What
yeah.
is that about?
Well, I'm not entirely sure. But it certainly does correlate to a lot of the same behaviors that we look at as addictive.
Mm-hmm.
And we know when people get addicted, say, to gambling, a lot of times the addiction is triggered by a random reward and punishment cycle. So, like with a slot machine, I tell my clients, you know, you pull the handle and sometimes you win and other times you lose. And every time you lose, you want to pull the handle again to make sure you maybe are going to win the next time. And people can get into these relationships with manipulators. Manipulators are very good. They actually reject or punish you a great portion of the time, but every once in a while they give you this big zapping reward of attention and adoration, and that's just hypnotic. And it can really catch some of us and just pull us in, and then it seems very hard to leave.
I know, and it really is. And I do feel, though, a lot of times now, maybe, I don't know if you see this also, the longer you stay in a destructive relationship, the harder it is to mentally get out of it because of the fact that you become very beaten down into it and you lose who you are.
That's what I see a great deal, is you may enter this relationship with a good sense of yourself and what's important to you, with friends, with a career, with money in the bank, and quite honestly, after being invalidated and discounted and ignored, the caretaker person becomes more and more loss of their self-esteem, mm-hmm. loss of their idea of what they had in mind for their life. And they often feel very, very obligated to stay. And a lot of times I'll hear women say, well, I put so much time into this. I've already invested so much. And quite honestly, when you invest with an emotionally manipulative person, that's no investment. That's your energy and your love down the drain. And it's very hard to come to that final conclusion that all of this has not been what I wanted, and I have to start over. And that's very, very difficult.
Would you be able to explain to women what you feel the term borderline versus narcissist, where the differences are?
Okay. Well, maybe I'll start with the things that are similar.
Okay.
And then talk about the things that are different. The borderline is, and narcissists share quite a few qualities. They are manipulative. They are very focused on their own interests. They're dramatic. They have a high need to control the emotional climate. They actually are very insecure and needy, although the narcissist covers that up. They really can't be intimate. They want to be close, but as soon as they get close, they feel too vulnerable, and then typically they cause a fight and push you away, and then they don't want to leave the relationship either because that feels vulnerable. So they end up with this push-pull. So that's how they're similar. Borderlines, however, are much more emotionally dramatic. They are more likely to yell and scream and stomp around and have rage expressions. They're highly anxious. They can't stand being alone. And a lot of these characteristics are recognized in women, and so a lot of times common belief is that women are borderlines, but men are too. Men who are physically and emotionally abusive are definitely showing borderline characteristics. Narcissists, on the other hand, tend to be more crafty. They are more charming. They cover up their need. Oftentimes they talk about how independent and they don't need people, but in fact they do. Narcissists tend to also lack empathy and be very manipulative. Borderlines can be manipulative in their emotionality, but oftentimes they don't think about it. They're not trying to be manipulative, but narcissists tend to be trying to cover up things that they don't want you to know, or behaviors or needs that they have that they don't want to tell you about.
Now, do borderlines and narcissists differ from sociopaths?
Definitely.
Okay.
Sociopaths know they are tricking you. Sociopaths really don't have the ability to form an emotional connection. And quite honestly, borderlines and narcissists do have an emotional connection to their partners. It's just that they can't really be intimate. They can't show you their real true self. They feel very ashamed about who they really are and how they really feel. Whereas sociopaths, they're not ashamed about anything. They just want to get what they want. And if they can get away with it, they're fine. They leave relationships with really no feelings at all about it. Whereas narcissists and borderlines really do have a lot of pain at the end of relationships.
I wasn't aware that they did. I mean, is it true pain, or, I mean, is it pain for themselves because they feel they
That's
more so than for the person who they put through the torture?
No, they don't have pain for you. They have pain for themselves.
That's what I meant.
That is correct.
Right.
Yeah. Whereas the sociopath doesn't have any pain at all. It's just, they just walk away as if nothing ever was there.
You know, it's funny. I was having a conversation tonight with a young lady who's going through some pain. And, you know, she just couldn't understand why she's not getting a sorry apology, you know, an apology from her ex-husband, you know, to get some closure. And I said, because he's really not sorry. You know, people
That's
are
right.
not going to tell you they're sorry when they're not sorry. If anything, they're sorry about is getting caught and the fact that you left.
Yeah, yeah. And narcissists and borderlines are sorry the relationship ended because they no longer get their needs met. But oftentimes they're not terribly sorry for their partner. And I have a lot of clients who talk about what you mentioned is, I need some closure. I need them to see what they've done. I need them to apologize. And that is not going to happen with borderlines and narcissists.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100% on that. If you're waiting for an apology, you're never just
and
you're
a lot
waiting
of time,
forever. It's just not going to happen.
That's right. And a lot of times women stay in those relationships waiting for that insight and that apology, and that's just a huge waste of their life and energy because, like you say, it's not going to happen.
When it comes to the borderline personality, would you say that these guys, I like to say that my ex-husband had that kind of personality. He used to shout me down to shut me up is what I tell people. In other words,
absolutely.
The louder he would yell, the more I would shut down because I don't like living in conflict. So it's just easier for me to be quiet than to have to keep fighting back. And plus the fact that he knew how to push all the buttons of my emotional weakness and how to attack them. So the more I would fight back, the more he would attack. Is this a common trait, would you say, with borderline people?
I think that is a beautiful description, exactly, of borderline. Yes.
And I think that's why I really lost myself in that marriage, because I started out strong, but the longer I lived in that kind of a relationship, the weaker I became to where I didn't even recognize myself anymore. You know, I was a strong woman starting out, and I became, like I tell people, a dish rag, and that's about where I was.
That is a pattern I see a great deal, Bonnie. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very hard to maintain your perspective, your views, your own feelings when somebody is emotionally yelling and invalidating and attacking you. This is a person that you love when you get into that relationship, and when they do that behavior, number one, it's shocking at first. And then you keep telling yourself, well, they didn't mean it. They're having a bad day. I know they had a horrible childhood. There's a lot of ways
exactly.
we can explain it to ourselves. But every time we explain it that way, what we're doing is saying, well, my needs aren't important. And so we end up colluding with this. Because it, like you say, it's exhausting to keep fighting with somebody, but also when you just give in, you get beaten down, and your own needs and feelings and emotions just don't even get heard or recognized.
And I know that for me, I moved from there. No, I was just going to say, I moved from there into the walking on eggshells relationship. Because it became, I was so afraid to say anything because it would be the wrong thing to say. Do you find that also?
Oh, yeah. And it's the wrong thing to say because that's how they keep control. If they can say, no, you didn't say it right, you didn't do it right, it's not what you said, it's the way you said it, and they can think of a million different ways how you're wrong. You know, if you're kind of the person who wants to keep working on the relationship and trying to make it better, then you keep trying to please them. You keep trying to do what they ask, and yet they maintain control by never being pleased.
And that's the whole thing. I know that for me, I try to save myself earlier on in the relationship, and I was very lucky to be able to do that because he left thinking he's going to teach me a lesson. And just being away for a week gave me that strength to take back. But many women don't have that opportunity. Now, they're just staying in this destructive relationship. And I just like your opinion on this also, because here are my very strong feelings. That staying in a marriage for the sake of the children when it's a destructive relationship is destructive in itself for those children. Do you feel that way?
Yes, we have some very good research that shows that. That when the relationship is destructive, when the marriage is demeaning, it's hurtful to the marriage partners, the children see that. That's the model they have for marriage. They then try and protect the weaker parent, and they become caretakers. So it does not actually do children very much good to stay. Now, if the children never see this and don't pick up on it, it doesn't have as destructive an effect. But what we're talking about is pretty obvious, I think, in these relationships. Yeah.
And I told them that you may think that your children don't know what's going on, but, you know, because women say to me, my children will never know. They'll never know that I'm unhappy. I put on an act. I think that's you're really deluding yourself if you think your children don't know you're not happy, right?
That's right. That's right. In fact, I had a client not long ago whose husband finally moved out, and they're getting a divorce. And she said, you know, I was trying to make everything work and make everybody happy, but the whole household got more and more tense. And she said, after he moved out, even the cat was more relaxed. So the animals in our family pick up that energy, and certainly our children do.
Well, at this point, we have our guest calling in. This is Catherine, who was so honored that she's actually going to talk to you. So let me just connect her with you for a moment. Catherine, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
We hear you fine.
Okay, good.
Yes, we hear you.
Hi, Dr.
Felstead.
Hi, Catherine. Thank you so much for telling Bonnie about my book, and I'm so glad that it's been helpful to you.
So helpful. It was the most helpful thing that I've read in 3 years about narcissism, so I couldn't wait to tell Bonnie. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for doing that.
I was going to ask Catherine, what were some of the things that you were so impressed with that finally made sense to you in here?
Oh, my gosh. So many things. I think identifying the characteristics of the narcissist, I think the way you spoke about the narcissist made it a lot more, I don't know, I could understand it better, because you have talked about the sensitivity in the past that these people, you explained some of where they came from. At least for me, that was very helpful, because I didn't find that anywhere else. Most of the information that I was reading, it felt like loud screaming, like, go away, this person's going to screw your life and all that. And all of that is true, but I needed a more nuanced explanation of who are these people, what does this mental illness look like? And you did refer to it often, I mean, over and over as a mental illness, which I needed to hear. So I think you just kind of deconstructed the problem in a way that allowed me to understand it. And then what my issue was as a caretaker and why I was involved in this dance. I didn't see it that way until I really took in your words, the dance of denial and the dance on my husband, my ex-husband's side of what he needed from me. Really beautiful, beautifully explained.
Well, I'm glad that was helpful. I try to give lots of examples of these behaviors because oftentimes clinical descriptions are vague at best.
Mm-hmm.
And really identifying what you see in a day-to-day life and relationship, I think, makes it makes you more aware of what you're really dealing with. And definitely, it is a mental illness. It is both narcissism and borderline are mental illnesses. And they are very, very pervasive. They're not easy for people to make changes in those behaviors. And really, there have only one other book out there that really talked about their effect on the family members, and that's Randy Krieger's book, Stop Walking on Eggshells. And mm-hmm. I just felt like there was a lot that we as caretakers can do to change our lives and make things better for ourselves and for our children.
Well, that was really clear in your book. I mean, I think that message came out loud and clear over and over again. Okay, what am I going to do about this? Give up the expectations. Also, you spoke about how we put the children in the role of being adults. And that woke me up as well. What we do when we take care of these narcissists is ask our children to step up to a plate in a way that their father can't be an adult.
It's really true. When I saw that over and over in relationships, I just thought, you know, what are we teaching our kids? What kind of marriages and relationships will they have? And this doesn't make sense to have an adult who doesn't have to follow the rules and participate and really be part of the family. And yet we're, of course, trying to teach our children to do those things.
Mm-hmm.
I always say that we are the legacy to our children because they do model what we show them. And that if you stay in a marriage that's abusive in any way, mentally, physically, then we're giving the message that this is okay, and they are really destined to find the same thing for themselves. I see this repeating over and over again. Mm-hmm. You?
Yeah. We see a huge portion of people who have been in families with a narcissistic or borderline parent, and they go and find a narcissistic borderline spouse. And they take on the same caretaker role that they saw us do.
Exactly. So, Catherine, did you have anything else you wanted to mention to Dr.
Belfast? One line that really resonated for me was, confusion is the mind's way of buying time. And I think, you know, that woke me up and I asked myself a lot when I was reading your book, what did my denial look like and how long did that last? And I remember what I came away with was the image of potholes, kind of like landmines, but for me it was the image of potholes. And I asked myself, what landscape have I been walking? And I was avoiding, like, all of these, what I saw kind of triggering things, and they were like potholes to me. What happens if I fell into them? And I was looking at that, like, and this is connected to the idea of denial. Like, I just had to watch out for so many things and compensate all the time. And what would happen if I didn't? And as your book points out, and I was thinking about that, I might have found out that I wasn't loved as much as I thought, that I wasn't being appreciated as much as I thought. All of the things I was really denying, that I was wilting away, I can see that perfectly in retrospect, and I also journaled a lot about it. But denial is an incredible thing.
Well, denial is there for us, for our own protection in the short run.
Mm-hmm.
When we use it week after week, year after year, it means that all those things we're avoiding, we're just not having in our lives anymore. It diminishes our entire life. And it diminishes the lives for our children and for what we could be accomplishing and enjoying in our family. And that just seems really sad.
It does. It is. I just wanted to thank you again. I'm going to let Bonnie continue.
Thank you so much, Catherine, for calling in. And thanks to you, so many more women now will be able to read this book and hopefully get as much or not more, you know, benefit out of it. You have wonderful insight, and you've been on your journey for a little while. But I think that this book is wonderful for women at any point in their journey to give them the insight that they need about being caretakers. While you're on the phone, though, before you hang up, I just want to ask Dr. Felsen one more question.
Mm-hmm.
If women, I always tell women that when they get out of a relationship like this, they need time to heal and rebuild their own lives and to figure out where they allowed themselves to get to this point. Because if they don't, then I believe they really are destined to fall into another similar relationship with someone who's a taker or a predator. You know, it won't be the same kind of predator, but a different kind. Do you feel that's important also?
Oh, my goodness, yes. I suggest that people getting out of these relationships spend a good deal of time, in fact, really exploring what is it that they feel undeserving about? What were the patterns where did they learn these patterns to put up with this kind of treatment? And also, how can they recognize that mental illness pattern that is under the facade that narcissists and borderlines present? Because they will be very vulnerable in the next relationship if they don't learn that, and if they don't practice and get themselves out of always giving in, always paying attention to the other person, always looking at their needs. If you don't look at your own needs and your own direction in life, then you are very vulnerable to be preyed on by someone who wants to use your energy to do what they want.
I just wanted to ask you, when you talk about narcissism and borderline personalities being a mental illness, which I think we have to repeat a lot of times in the future for women to just get that understanding, in your opinion, is it more nature versus nurture, combination? What causes this?
Well, the DSM manual that gives us the outline of mental illnesses says that both borderline and narcissism is about 50% inherited. We don't know if it's inherited because of genes or if it is some kind of damage in utero. It's unknown at this point. So then what that gives us is a person who is born with a high vulnerability to being highly emotional, very intense, very focused on their own needs, very demanding. And then depending on what kind of childhood experiences they have, kind of determines what direction they go in, I think, whether it becomes a borderline. Borderlines very often have had sexual or physical abuse. They've often been rejected by their parents at some point. They've had a very intense emotional childhood. Narcissists, on the other hand, have often their parents demanded that they be adult, little adults, that they perform, that they be perfect. So depending on the kind of environment and circumstances and parenting a situation can have a big effect on whether this vulnerability to being borderline or narcissism develops. The thing I think is important about understanding that it has a biological basis is that that's not going to go away. Borderlines and narcissists don't learn very easily behaviors that work in intimate, vulnerable relationships. And so they may be able to make changes over time, but they have to be highly motivated. And certainly as caretakers, we don't have any ability to make them change.
Could you repeat that one more time, please?
As caretakers, we have no ability to make a narcissist or borderline change. And so many
times...
We just
feed into their personalities, is that right?
That's right. Every time we give in, every time we avoid the pothole, every time we give up our own needs and wants, every time we put up with being yelled at or invalidated, we're reinforcing them to do that behavior over and over again.
And I think that's what the key is, that we, you know, I think with our women, I always say that straight wives make the best wives because we try so hard over and over again to change something that can never change. And, you know, I know these are separate issues with homosexuality versus narcissism and borderline, but it's just really ironic that gay men who do marry as opposed to, you know, gay men who don't seem to have an extraordinary amount of these characteristics within them. And I think maybe it's because they're not living an authentic life, because when you live a lie after enough time, you start to believe your own lies. You become afraid of being exposed, so you have to always protect yourself, and your needs come first. So I think there is a high percentage of our husbands, you know, who are gay, who also are, you know, suffer with this narcissism or borderline or even sociopathic kinds of behavior, who leave a trail of destruction, and they can never give you the empathy you need. And also the fact that they're gay, they can never be mates to you anyway. But I guess it's the same thing if you're a straight narcissist and a straight borderline, you're still not going to be a great mate to somebody, right? It has nothing to do with sexuality when it comes to mental illness, right?
Well, you're exactly right. What you're describing in both instances is a person who cannot be emotionally intimate because they have so much to hide. Narcissists are hiding the fact that they really feel vulnerable. They feel very shameful. They feel unworthy and imperfect, and they cover it up with this bravado. And what I'm hearing you say is a gay man that marries is also covering up these things that would be necessary to be intimate. So a lot of similarities. You're exactly right.
And I just think that when you're living a life that's not authentic or not real and you're always having to cover it, I was wondering with that, what you were giving a description, with narcissists, you know, do they know that they're doing this behavior? I mean, are they aware or alert about it?
You know, I've spent the last 20 years trying to ponder that question. I think sometimes they're aware, but I think a good portion of the time they're not. They cover up and repress these vulnerable feelings, and so they believe their own lies, in essence. They believe that the facade they're presenting to the world is really who they are. And narcissists rarely come into therapy, and if they do, it's usually one or two visits, because they don't want to be found out. They don't want anyone to know their deepest emotional feelings. They're
and that's
very,
very similar to our gay husbands too. They don't want. They'll go once or twice, but then as soon as they're challenged by the therapist, they're not going back. Or that therapist
doesn't
know what she's talking about.
Yeah, that's what I hear too from narcissists. The other similarity I'm hearing, which is even stronger, and that is the caretakers that I describe in these relationships have the same behaviors you're talking about with the straight wives, that always keep trying, always work to try and fix it. And I think they all have to come to terms with the fact that none of us can fix somebody else. The other person has to be motivated in themselves to be honest and come forth in figuring out who they are. And if they can't do it, then the only way to save ourselves is for us to do it. And quite honestly, caretakers are much mentally healthier. People who are taking care of someone else has the ability to see other people's needs, to empathize, to be interested and caring and show that. And so those are very strong qualities, but we have to be sure we apply those qualities to ourselves and not just the other person.
Catherine, you're still there, right?
I am. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I wanted to ask you a question.
I didn't want to take the chance of losing the show. Go ahead.
Okay, I wanted to ask you this question. After reading Dr. Felstead's book, do you feel that in your next relationship you would make better choices or look for different things before getting involved from learning what you did?
Absolutely. I actually had a relationship and was absolutely blown away by what it feels like to be in relationship with someone that is giving. I hadn't had that since well before I met my husband. So having had a taste of that, it's dramatically different, and I was glad that that relationship is over, but I was glad to see that I could experience that, and now that I have, that's what I want. I mean, what a difference. So, yes, I think there's hope for us.
Mm-hmm. And by reading, you know, this book, I think there were some good keys in there for you to look for, you know, for everyone, not just you. But did you find that helpful as far as, like, a next relationship or things to avoid?
Definitely. And Dr. Felstead talks about sense of self. And I don't know, I signed on to the show a little bit late, so I don't know if you spoke about that before. But it made me reflect on what do I want, what can I expect out of a relationship. It just made me think about what is my vision, and the focusing on denial, as I spoke about before, I think just illuminating that for me, I don't imagine I could possibly be in denial the way I was in the past. My own feelings are just too important now after having gone through what I went through. And then reading Dr. Felstead's book.
Do you think that the important key here is learning to trust yourself again, to make better decisions, to love yourself enough to not fall into the same pitfalls each time, and that there's nothing wrong with wanting to have your needs met, that you don't have to always validate yourself by meeting somebody else's needs?
Oh, my goodness. That's a good summary, Moni. Very much so. There's nothing wrong with taking care of your own needs. And in a relationship, you should be taking care of your own needs. And the caretaking and caring of that you get from another person in a relationship should add to what you are doing for yourself. I often tell my clients, you know, this is very much the same as being on an airplane. When they tell you about the oxygen mask dropping down, one of the things they say in an emergency, put the oxygen mask on yourself first and then your children and others, help others around you. And I think that's such a good rule of thumb for life. If you don't have oxygen, if you don't have a sense of self, how are you going to truly be helpful and loving of other people?
You're right, absolutely. I mean, that's the whole key to it. I always say you can never truly love someone totally unless you love yourself, because otherwise it's not true love, it's just need more than love.
Correct, correct.
But I think these are lessons that, you know, women can learn through therapy, and that's why I'm so glad that, you know, I found you, because we have many women who are in your area. Maybe there's something in the water in Colorado. I don't know. We have a lot of women with gay husbands there. So I don't know if you've been running into many, but I sure have. And I always say,
well,
oh,
I bet
Colorado.
You do.
And my dear friend Jody, who lives there. And, you know, I say to Jody, there must be something going on in Colorado that get all these women from there. But, you know, do you do therapy outside, by Skype, by phone, by other ways that people...
Yes. There's several things that I have to offer. I do therapy by phone, and I've been doing, since the book came out, therapy with people all over the country. And I'm finding it's very helpful because there are so many questions, and just having someone really say, yeah, you're on the right track, this is happening, and these are some of the things you can do about it. The other thing on my website, I also have a workbook that goes with my book, and that workbook has lots and lots of questions and exercises for people to do that go along with the material in the book to help you. Catherine mentioned she did a lot of journaling, and these questions are really good journaling questions. And in the spring, I will have a class that uses the same format as my caretaker recovery groups, and that'll be available in the spring.
Okay, and now to get your book, what's the best way to do it? Is it to go to your website or go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble or anything?
It is at Amazon, so you just go to Amazon and put in my name, Felstead, which is spelled F-J-E-L-S-T-A-D, and it will pop right up. You can go to my website, and there is an icon that shows the cover of my book, and all you have to do is click on that, and that automatically takes you to Amazon to order the book.
Yep.
The workbook can be ordered in on my website on the shop page, and you can just click on that, and it's a download that just comes right to your computer instantly.
Well, I know. I just clicked on your link on your website. And I'll tell people what that is. It's www.margalistherapy.com. And I also will post, I have it posted on our special page on Facebook, and also I have it in the newsletter that went out. But I just went to your website, and I did click into it, and I did buy the book. And it's that easy. You can buy it right there from Amazon. And I think that this is so important for our women who are moving ahead to be able to have this as their guidebook. And I really hope that I can impose on you to come back again, maybe in a few months after I have a chance to finish reading the book. And, you know, we'd love to have you come back, and that would be okay with you.
Well, I'd love to come back, and I would be very happy to... you know, hear from anybody that has questions about the book, and they can contact me at margalistherapy@gmail.com. And they can also request a newsletter, which I send out every couple of weeks, and usually have an article in there and information about some of the things that connections that I've found that will be helpful.
Yes, and so I'm so excited. I got my first newsletter, and in fact, I took the advantage of copying some of it in my newsletter so women could start realizing they can get this themselves. So
I really
appreciate
that, Bonnie.
That.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Well, I appreciate you, and I'm going to keep, you know, printing some of the things that you sent me about how you can tell if you're a caretaker or some of these questions that you came up with for tonight that we never even had a chance to get to because I just kept diverting you in 20 other directions, so I apologize. But,
well, this is a very big area, so, you know, I'd be happy to talk some more about it in the future.
That'll be great. And Catherine, you're still there?
Yeah, the two of you
are
an amazing combination. The two of you are an amazing combination. So thank you. You're both together.
And I want to thank you. Well, you're with us here. I want to thank you so much for your insight and your kind words. And to be quite honest with you, I think a lot of people will probably be, you know, it'll be difficult for them to get that spelling of your name. So don't worry about it. If you go to Amazon, you just put down caretaker, you're going to find that book.
That's a good way to do it, too, yes.
You
and
know,
thank you, Catherine, very much.
You'll find it.
Thank you so much
all right,
for
ladies,
your support. Take care.
Thank you all both so much, and I'll be looking forward after the first of the year to having you come back here and continuing this conversation, Dr. Felstead. And
thanks,
to
Bonnie.
Catherine,
it's been
thank
a
you
pleasure.
So much, too. Thank
good
you.
Night,
and to all our listeners.
Thank you.
Good night. We'll be back here next Sunday night for Straight Wives Talk Show. Good night now.
Good night.